Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Chris Loughrie. There's an exhibit at the Old Courthouse Museum that educates us on both Prohibition and women's suffrage. Now, this is an exhibit that's free and open to the public and focuses both on the national and local levels. Kevin Gans is Curator of Education, and Ben Devlin is Exhibits Assistant at Siouxland Heritage Museums. They both join us inside the Kirby Family Studio in downtown Sioux Falls. Kevin, thanks so much for being here.
It's our pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Ben, thanks to you as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, at the end of the 19th century and the start of the 20th, South Dakota was on the leading edge, if you will, of a national effort to deal with two key social issues. All right, these were big issues: prohibition of alcohol and women's voting rights. Kevin, if we could start with you, let's go back to the inception of this exhibit at the Old Courthouse Museum and what the pairing of these two political fights made sense.
Well, I think one of the things is, first off, that we're just about to celebrate the 100th anniversary.
Oh, sure.
And I mean, you need to think about the fact that we're only coming up on 100 years that women have had the right to vote in this country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, prohibition is coming about at the same time. But I think this whole era, if you will, in the latter part of, the century there, turn of the century, is this progressive era. Everybody's taking a look at what's going on socially in our country. And women seem to be at the forefront. They're really trying to bring about a change in America, a change in the home, a change in our healthcare, in our schools. And you know, they want their place in the arena. And that's going to be politics. That's going to be suffrage. But at the same end, one of the evils, if you will, that's lurking out there that people say is alcohol. And you know, of course, a lot of women see alcohol as the destruction of the family. Mm. At that time, that's one of the main things that they're talking about. So, putting the two together, if we get women voting, they'll vote prohibition. Everything will be great in this country.
You mentioned the progressive era. Now, that's a time from like 1890 to 1920. Those three decades were big decades.
Big decades. And, you know, South Dakota becomes a state in 1889. Mm-hmm. And we've got to make the decision, what are we going to do here? You know, are we going to vote women, give women the right to vote? And they don't. But they say, basically, we're going to become a state, but we're going to leave it up to the electorate. And we're going to have an election in 1890. And, you know, South Dakota itself is going to decide. And they decide not to grant women the right to vote. So from the elections from through 1890, early turn of the century, up until it happens in 1918, this is going to continuously see women's suffrage on the ballot and a lot of discussion about that.
Now, if I'm being honest, it saddens me to know that this was an issue, that women didn't have the right to vote. It's probably because of where I live and how I was grown up or raised and things like that. It was a big deal. They weren't allowed to do it.
It's really big. And I think when we look at it, too, a lot of the states that are coming in, these Western states that are coming in at that time, are very progressive. They are granting women the right to vote, and they don't in South Dakota. But there's a lot of weird undertones within this, too. There's some religious undertones. There's this idea that this is going to destroy the femininity of women a little bit. And, you know, one of the big opponents are women themselves to women's suffrage. And some of the women right here in South Dakota are going to start anti-suffrage newspapers to turn it in favor of not granting the right to vote to women. So it's amazing to think about at the time.
I would maybe argue that it did just the opposite. I mean, it allowed them more freedoms.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that, you know, one of the anti-suffrage newspapers states that, you know, if you think getting the right to vote is going to lessen your duties at home or in raising your children, that's just not going to happen at the time. And you know, the whole idea is to, well, if you're married, and, you know, your husband's going to vote, he's going to tell you how to vote. And if you choose to vote a different way, you're just going to negate his vote. So why would you even want to do that? Mm-hmm. You know, so some of the arguments against the suffrage, they don't really hold up, you know. And a lot of the women who are very active and pro-suffrage, you know, are kind of really seen as quite radical at the time.
I'm going to bounce back and forth here because we're talking two different things. We're talking prohibition. We're talking women's suffrage. It's been said that prohibition could only be brought about if women had the right to vote. Now, for that reason, some in the brewing business were not for women's suffrage. Ben, I'm going to bring you in. Is there truth to that?
Yeah, the German population was adamantly opposed to prohibition. They believed that if women received the right to vote, then they would just vote for prohibition. And it was very much part of their culture and their daily lives to produce and make beer. So mm-hmm. a lot of the brewmasters were adamantly against prohibition.
Now, others that were opposed to women's suffrage felt that recognizing a woman's right to vote could erode the family unit by fostering political arguments in the home. Is there a truth to that, Kevin?
You know, I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so at all. And I think, again, women were leading a lot of these social issues, and these were about making the lives of people better, especially children, making sure that education, our health care, our food that we were eating at the time. So, you know, on the social end, I don't think that holds any water.
How long did it take you to put this exhibit together?
It was a process, and you know, and what we were trying to do was find a lot of firsthand accounts. Mm-hmm. You know, you read through some newspapers at the time, and you know, one of the best experiences I think we had is I had another staff member who was helping me out, mm-hmm. and with one of the issues, and I'm like, you know, can you kind of figure out a little bit what's going on here? And she wrote me an email back, and she's like, well, first, before you read this, you need to know that this was written from a place of anger, because mm-hmm. she was just appalled at some of the stuff that we would find out there, arguments for, arguments against, you know, and it's very, very contentious, mm-hmm. You know, to take a look at. So it was a process to try to put something together, because we did marry the two issues together, and we wanted to connect them, but we wanted the issues to stand on their own as well. And certainly, you know, we're ending with a national amendment giving women the right to vote, and we're then starting with a national amendment starting prohibition. So we had to go a little further in the prohibition end of things.
Ben, how about you and your preparation for your side of this exhibit?
Well, the challenge for me was to kind of marry the two together. Mm-hmm. I know Kevin was doing a lot of research on the suffrage side, and then I was doing more of the prohibition side, but then we had to tie them together. So there are some challenges finding links between the two, but luckily there were plenty of links, especially from local advocates for both prohibition and suffrage, and also on the national level. There were, like Frances Willard was the Women's Christian Temperance Union's second president, and she was a big advocate for both suffrage because she saw and prohibition because she believed that neither would succeed if women didn't get the right to vote.
Give me a timeline, if you will. When did this exhibit come to become something? How long of a time did it take until it happened?
Well, you know, I was looking at the suffrage issue a while ago. Mm-hmm. I always like to look at what's timely, what's coming up on a big anniversary when mm-hmm. we look at some of these things. And, you know, we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of the amendments, the national amendments. And so I actually had been looking at this a number of years ago. I watched the Ken Burns series that he did on women's suffrage. And personally, it's something that interests me. I grew up in Western New York, which at the time was the hotbed. You know, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton were living in that area, the Seneca Falls Convention. You know, Seneca Falls is about 30 minutes from where I grew up. So this has always been something that's very much interested me. So I had some stuff that I had set aside as far as the research, but you know, we tried to look out, you know, 2 to 3 years on an exhibit schedule, what might we want to come up with? And, you know, this topic was one that kind of kept coming up to the fore. So we thought, it's timely. We better do something with this.
You said New York, and I don't mean to be stereotypical, but the first thing I thought of was organized crime. And we're going to talk about that a little bit because it ties into prohibition and, yep. and things like that. But let's get to the voting thing, because I read something at your exhibit that just kind of blew my mind, if you will. Some thought that women would simply vote their husband's preference. Really? Did this indeed happen? I mean, did that really happen?
You know, I think for some women that probably was the case. I mean, I think one of the largest arguments was that still the man was the head of the family, and mm-hmm. he's, you know, and what he was going to say is what was going to go. And so that the women would just look to men to figure out how to vote. And that the other end of that, too, is that politicians would pander then to women and, you know, just, you know, The issue might not be right, but, you know, they'll pander to women if we give them the right to vote, and they'll all throw their votes that way. And, you know, politics will just be thrown in an uproar because of this. But I don't know that that really happened. Germans took a big hit on this one, mm-hmm. too. There was a lot of kind of this anti-German feeling, and that the Germans were, you know, they're anti-prohibition and they were anti-women's suffrage, and that maybe some of these German immigrant populations weren't treating their women as they should be. And there's a little bit of that out there, which, you know, very much I don't think was true.
We're going to get to that in just a minute. I'm pretty sure I can be safe to say that my wife's not voting the way I'm voting. Right, just for the record. If you're just joining us, Kevin Ganz is curator of education and Ben Devlin is exhibits assistant at Siouxland Heritage Museums. And we're talking about an exhibit on prohibition and women's suffrage. And now, Ben, to you. Now, German immigrants, they strongly opposed prohibition. Now, was this culturally? Was this politically? Was it a combination of both?
It's very much both. Culturally, they came from very like a long lineage of brewmasters. Mm-hmm. And politically, they feared that if women received the right to vote, then they would vote for prohibition, which would affect their livelihoods. And this is all coming at a time when there's a lot of anti-German sentiments with World War I going on. Mm-hmm. So they felt very threatened by the prospect of women's suffrage.
Now, South Dakota voted itself dry in 1916 and right. voted women the right to vote in 1918. What's really interesting about this when you look at this exhibit and you go see it is this was done before the national and the feds did this. Why was it so important for South Dakota to do this prior to it becoming federal?
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting is, you know, as much as we tried to marry the two subjects together, when it was actually taking place, they divided themselves. In 1911, the South Dakota Universal Franchise League, they get started. Mamie Pyle becomes their leader, and she's never been very outspoken mm-hmm. on prohibition, and they divide it. They're like, prohibitionists, you're going to have to go it alone on this one. You know, we're going to make suffrage the issue, and that's what we're going to put our efforts to. So already they were dividing themselves a little bit on that issue. But I think if we were going to stay with that progressive era, if we were going to be progressive in the Western states and show how progressive we were, then certainly we needed to do it before a national amendment would come up.
It just seemed, 1916 and 1918 respectively, you would have thought that maybe they would have been closer together. A couple of years is really not a lot of time, but I wonder, it just seems like it didn't take long. Let's just say that.
Absolutely.
I mean, they voted themselves dry, and then all of a sudden women are right to vote, mm-hmm. just like that. Now, towards the end of the 19th century, the U.S. saw an influx of immigrants. Mm-hmm. Do you suppose this had any effect on either of these two issues, Ben?
Might have to bounce that one to Kevin.
I'm really going to say we're going to pick on the Germans again a little bit. But and Ben mentioned it a little bit is 1917. We got involved in World War I, and Germany became our enemy, and we had a huge German immigrant population. Mm. And this is the thing to think a little bit about too when you talk about suffrage. As these new immigrant populations were coming into South Dakota, they simply had to take out their first papers with their intent that I'm going to become a citizen. And the state granted them the right to vote. Still didn't allow women to vote, but these new immigrants who weren't yet citizens just had declared their intention and signed their first papers were given it. And this incensed women. So now we're getting into World War I. Germany has now become our enemy. And so now we need to look at these large German populations that we have here in South Dakota. And should we really be giving them the right to vote? And if we, you know, if we're giving them the right to vote and we're denying that vote to women, what are we saying about women mm-hmm. At that time? And are they citizens? Are they true Americans? So really kind of this vote, especially for women's suffrage in 1918, is kind of a citizenship issue as well. And, you know, will women be on equal footing as citizens, not only as, you know, in the political arena, but just as citizens of our country?
We have about a minute left, and since you bounced that question to Kevin, I'm coming right back to you.
Sounds good. That's fair.
One mobster comes to mind, and by the way, when you go to this exhibit, I open the right door. I'm just saying, all right? Al Capone. All right. Did his reach that we know of make it to South Dakota? Because, you know, President Hoover really believed that prohibition would both reduce alcoholism and crime and keep families together, didn't he? I want to know if Al Capone's reach came as far as South Dakota.
you know, this is one of the biggest surprises during my research was that Al Capone's reach did make it to South Dakota and even Sioux Falls, where he was hiring different distilleries to make bootleg liquor. And there was actually a really large one that was kind of where Ellis Road is at now, just a little bit west of town. And they prohibition agents busted it in the in 1928, and they believe that it was so big that it was probably linked to Al Capone, and they were distributing the liquor down to somewhere in Sioux City. So his reach was pretty sweeping across the nation.
Well, I did not expect you to say Sioux Falls.
Yep,
I wasn't expecting that. So next time I drive down Ellis Road, I'm going to go, okay.
Yep, one of those farms was probably at one point a big distillery for Al Capone.
Kevin Gans is curator of education, and Ben Devlin is exhibits assistant at Siouxland Heritage Museums. This is a fabulous exhibit, and I really suggest you go see it. It's free. It won't take you long to go through it, and it's remarkable. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure.